This is the homily for the second Sunday of Advent, 2025, at St. Anselm's Abbey. The readings for the day's Mass were the book of the prophet Isaiah, chapter 11, verses 1 to 10, the letter of St. Paul to the Romans, chapter 15, verses 4 to 9, and the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. The homilist was Father Gabriel Myers.
The promises of Advent, which we hear in the first readings of Advent, use simple imagery to make profound statements about God, about ourselves, about the meaning of life. These promise images are so simple and obvious, it is hard to expound on them. The imagery comes, like much poetic imagery does, from nature. Though we live in a city, we still are connected to nature, to soil, trees, sky, river. The Advent promises start in the desert, an unfriendly, inhospitable place. They want us to go out to the desert, that dry, dangerous place where you can get lost and run out of water. But, the prophets say, you must go there if you are to see what you miss in ordinary life. A voice cries in the desert, prepare a road for the Lord, make crooked paths straight. The low valleys shall be lifted high, they shall be exalted. The mountains shall be crumbled and humbled. What is uneven and rough shall become pleasant and smooth. This will show God's glory to humans. These promises are unsettling. What we seem sure of becomes completely uncertain. What seems permanent starts to crack apart. If you are powerful, you will lose your place. If you are a nobody, it seems nice, but it may not be fun to manage the freedom you always thought you wanted. Too much freedom can be as hard as not enough. The desert. Go into the place where sand wears down rocks. Go thirsty so that God can pour rivers of unpolluted water through your lips. The tree stump. Not a green tree with leaves and fruit, but a useless stump of a tree that has been chopped down or overturned by lightning. Stump is an ugly word, rhyming with frump, dump, bump, that kind of boo-boo you get on your head when learning to walk, and one unmentionable syllable. A shoot shall spring from Jesse's stump, a branch shall rise from dead roots. He will bring the spirit and delight of the Lord. He shall judge the poor fairly and give the lowly equality. He shall make the wolf dwell with the lamb, the leopard and lion and calf together. A child will be able to play safely atop a snake pit. No one will get hurt by the Second Amendment. Earth shall overflow with spiritual knowledge as the ocean gets so high it must spill onto the beach. There are many animals here, but no predators. The friendly beasts around him stood, we sing in the children's carol. Children are playing, which is not like the culture from which these prophecies came, where children were needed to work, making them a commodity, as tragically still goes on in our sophisticated world when the vulnerable are trafficked. The leader is very unlike the leaders of our day who appeal to people's greed and fear and hatreds. But there is more. The wilderness and dry land shall rejoice. They shall blossom like a rose. The cedars of Lebanon are nothing to the desert's majesty, where the blind shall see, the deaf hear, the disabled will win the marathon. Roll out a royal highway, prohibit from it the powerful and cruel, and in the first reading's word, the ruthless. Let the redeemed walk and dance there till sorrows are forgotten. This prophecy knows how things are now, that we can't or won't see. We close our ears. We self-defeatingly disable ourselves. We ruin our environment or let others get away with raping the earth. And really, we deserve nothing. But God offers luxury. Or more accurately, God beckons you to seek that luxury. By the highway image, you cannot stay put. You cannot stick in your rut. You must restlessly move forward to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion, for which John Bunyan's pilgrim risks even the frigid and annihilating waters of extinction. We don't get the promises fulfilled without paying a certain price. But the prophets would say, you mostly don't care. The prophets knew that few would listen and fewer still take action. You won't ask for a sign, Isaiah says, but I will give a sign to you anyway. It will seem the most useless solution for the steel trap now squeezing the world. A virgin shall conceive and bear a child, and shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. Let us leave aside for a minute the impossibility of a woman giving birth without male involvement. That has importance, but right now, concentrate on the simplicity of the event of birth, how it can happen to the unready, and how childbirth may not happen for many who long for it. We are reminded in this promise of being once infants ourselves, though we cannot remember that state. Most of us welcomed into the arms of our mother, and if that didn't happen, I certainly pray, God, that someone else came to your rescue. What we didn't know at the time was however wonderful our birth was, mama or caregiver had many problems which were only just beginning. She had to learn what to do when baby would not stop crying. What to do when baby first walked and encountered bumps on his head. I myself think of 2-year-old Stokely, whose family I got to know after he drowned in a few inches of water at daycare. The world is so dangerous. Or mama's problems when later the baby learned to say no, no. Or even later went through adolescence, where the child becomes resistant and rebellious in order to become autonomous. But it is still hard in the family. Or mama's problems later still, when the child fails to launch. Even Jesus gave his parents some of these problems, staying behind in Jerusalem without permission, not raising up proper grandchildren to honor his parents. The promise of Emmanuel seems strange because we want enfleshed relationships, not invisible ones. How can we really know that God is with us if we cannot see or feel him? You are not a tiny, insignificant worm, O Bethlehem. However much like Gaza, Venezuela, or Ukraine you seem. For from Bethlehem a star will rise, and you will walk by its light. The wise men's star at the other end of this season looks tiny. Nearly no one notices or can interpret it. But at Christmas we do focus on stars and babies and songs and candles and even the cows who warm the child with their breath, the friendly beasts around him stood. In certain ways we rediscover innocence, at least for a time, and even sing together, which is a nearly extinct skill in the modern world. We try to remember the poor for whom the Advent promises were intended. They were really not intended for us, the comfortable. Yet we the comfortable also long for a peaceable kingdom. We are disappointed because the real world is still there. And at a personal level, many of us know someone critically ill, someone who may not be here next Christmas. I want to end with a later prophet, perhaps claimable by our own English Benedictine congregation, to which St. Anselm's belongs, a woman from 700 years ago, who lived not that far from our sisters in Stanbrook Abbey, and was the type of monastic called anchorite. She was walled up in a room connecting to the church, which certainly seems strange, and I would not recommend today. People brought her food because they wanted the wisdom she was gaining from her enclosed life of prayer. Like biblical prophets, she wrote down her wisdom, and in fact was the first female author in the English language, contemporary with Geoffrey Chaucer. She, of course, some of you know, is Mother Julian of Norwich, the city of Norwich in England. Mother Julian wrote provocatively of not Jesus being like a mother, but Jesus being an actual mother. Prophets perceive things that conventional Christians like you and I cannot. The most famous quotation from her showings or visions is the repetitive trio of lines, "All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well." She liked the sound of the letter L, which rings out like a bell. But why choose that adverb, well, when she might say, all things shall be okay, or all things shall be corrected, or all things shall be sifted so that only the good remains? I think her cell showed her, and she called her book The Showings, that enclosed spaces can bring forth great things, and that she had in mind the well, which must have been underneath her or nearby. A hole in the ground is an unlikely place to seek joy and delight. If a hole in the ground pricks into a spring, the clear sparkling water that gushes forth is an unexpected luxury. The water is rather like the abundance imagined by Isaiah and Zephaniah in the desert. An imaginary thing not yet here can, Mother Julian proposes, represent something real. If only God can give it. If only we can hope for it.